and welcome to a very special edition of the Women's Golf Show with me, Jenny Faulkner. That's right, we're back for one last time in 2021 to look back at everything that has happened since the last podcast and to look back at the year as a whole. We'll recap the finales of the LPGA and LET, plus the Q series that just concluded this week. We'll also talk top tips for keeping your golfing eye in over the winter. So there's all this and much more to come. There's so much to talk about and helping me to do this today. Well, we're keeping it Scottish. I've got to say, I've got two fantastic guests in what is definitely an all Scottish affair. I mean, some of them are in fancier climates, so I've got to say. My first guest is presenter and commentator for the likes of Sky Sports and Golf TV. It is Iona Stephen. Hello there.
Hello, Jenny. When you were doing that introduction there, I was thinking, who's that? Wow. That's me.
It's you. Hello. It's you. I mean, where are you today, by the way?
I am in my house in St Andrews. I'm looking out to a rather grey day, but it's rather cosy in here. So I'm delighted to be inside having a wee blether with you.
Oh, no, it's lovely to chat to you as well. A little bit of pre-Christmas banter as well. Always nice. I mean, are we interrupting your off-season downtime at the moment?
I'm not going to lie, yes.
Sorry.
Anything for you, Jenny. And it's always great to, you know, keep the noggin ticking over and, you know, reflect on the year. And I think, in fact, some of the things we're going to talk about today have been really enjoyable for me to reflect on. I don't want to, you know, no spoilers here, but it's a really healthy thing, I think, to reflect before we do officially switch off. And then we can look forward to 2022.
Absolutely. But the thing is, you split your time, I mean, between both men's and women's golf. So is that quite hard to kind of keep your head across what's going on throughout the season?
Yeah, it is hard. I think for some journalists that are brighter than me, it's probably not so hard. But, you know, there's a lot to take in. And as we know, consuming golf takes a lot of time. And I don't want to spoil who our next guest is, but I do follow her career closely, as does my whole family, actually, a fellow Scot. And this year I had the privilege of covering both the Evian and the AIG Women's Open. So I was lucky to be an on-course commentator at two major events on the women's side of the game this year. But predominantly it is the men's. And of course, I am a woman that plays golf. So naturally, I have an interest in women's golf from the grassroots right to the very elite end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty good at your golf, actually, aren't you? So it's good to have you here today. Listen, let's chat. Let's introduce our second guest. I mean, her off-season is only just starting. She's fresh from securing her playing rights in the LPGA next year. Yes, well done. It's Gemma Driver. Hello there.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for having me on. Very excited to talk to you both.
We're very excited to have you. I mean, yeah, look, so we've got Iona in St Andrews. You've got me in London, also grey. And here we go. Just wait. Where are you, Gemma?
Sunny Florida.
Amazing. I feel like you deserve a little bit of time in Florida, though.
I would say so. After the grind that was the Q series, it was quite the marathon. So I'm just going to be lying on my lounger with a margarita.
Yeah. Are you? I mean, I presume you're still buzzing after the weekend.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely buzzing. Yeah. It was just it's just a weight off your shoulders. Really, it's quite just so intense. I mean, Q school is the purest, like, most intense form of golf, I would say. So just very glad to be done. It felt like it took forever, but we got it done and very excited for next season.
Yeah, I want to talk more about it. Can I ask, though, what's the celebration afterwards like?
Well, so we're in Dothan, Alabama, which is a very middle of nowhere place, shall we say. Great place, but there's not much going on. So we ended up going to Outback, if you've been there, the classic American chain. But I went with my parents were with me and my caddy and his wife. So we all went for a nice dinner and some Prosecco to celebrate and just a few drinks, really, which was lovely.
Lovely. I saw that on your Instagram. I saw that your mum and dad had tagged along as well. Do they go everywhere with you, or do they just choose the sunny locations?
Just the sunny locations, usually, especially mum. But yeah, they haven't been able to come over to the States, obviously, with the COVID restrictions. So this is the first time they've been able to come over in a couple of years. They came to the British Open this year and the Scottish, so that was great. But apart from that, they haven't really been able to see me. Dad's been caddying at the Rose events, which has been fun, especially for him. But yeah, they haven't been able to see me too much over the last couple of years, which is a shame, but hopefully that will change next year.
Yeah, well, it gives them a nice break from Scotland as well. So there you go. Emily, we will talk a bit more about the Q2s a little later in the show. Since we last spoke, just after the Solheim Cup, both the LPGA and LET wrapped up with their usual season-ending events. Now, the LPGA concluded in Southern Florida with the CME Group Tour Championship, where I think it's fair to say there's quite a lot on the line. So Jin Young Ko and Nelly Korda both started their week within 10 points of each other in the Player of the Year standings. So a win for either would guarantee them the prestigious title. And what happened? Well, of course, they were tied for the lead heading into the final day, along with Nasa Hatooka and Celine Boutier, right? But it was Jin Young Ko with a truly flawless display on the Sunday who edged out Nasa to win the week and the Player of the Year title. I mean, five wins this season and her first didn't come until July. She was playing well, hey?
Yeah, she was playing very well. I was witness to one of her wins in Portland. I was in the final group with her and it was just amazing to watch, really. I think she hit 63 greens in a row, something crazy like that. Unbelievable, really.
You know, at one point as well, she had a streak of 14 consecutive rounds under 70. It's very impressive.
Yeah, she's unbelievable, honestly. Just so consistent, doesn't really make any mistakes, really. And if she does, it's maybe one or two a round at max. And she just got the great caddy on her bag as well, Dave Booker. So she's just got a great team around her, and I'm sure she'll do great things next year as well.
When you see her play, Gemma, what do you observe about the way she plays?
Well, I'd just say, I think when you see her play, you would never know. Obviously, she never really has bad rounds, but even if she did, she would just be so even keel. Like, there's no ups and downs with her. You know, when she's on a birdie run, you wouldn't be able to tell. She doesn't get too excited. It's like very even. And just so calm, and she always looks content, I would say. And she just so consistent, like it's always the control with her irons and her distance control is amazing, and her, she can putt, that's for sure as well.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous. I'd love to be able to putt. That would be really useful. Iona, I mean, that's a pretty strong finish to the season, I guess.
Well, it certainly is, Jenny. And I don't know about you girls, but this narrative is kind of reminding me of the recent Formula One events where, you know, you've had the whole season taking place and ultimately it comes down to the final event, the final round, and those two players with that wonderful rivalry going head to head. And I think that's so important in sport and in golf, you know, that we have these rivalries. You almost want to create a little bit of abrasion there to sort of supply that energy to the audience, because that's what we crave in sport as spectators, as commentators, as people that love sport. So it's a wonderful way to see the LPGA finish. And I hope that's a rivalry that continues for many, many more years and that there are other ones coming up below that.
I know we should mention Nelly Korda. I mean, we should talk about her because she's had a great year. I mean, Olympic gold in Tokyo, four wins on the LPGA, including the PGA Championship, which was, I think, was that the first major victory of her career?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and she is a superstar, Nelly Korda. She's got that sort of star aura about her and the demeanour and the way that she carries herself, I think, as a spectator. And, you know, it was great to see things coming down to the very last round in the way that they did, and it tees up an exciting 2022.
It does. I mean, she's ended the year as well ranked the number one player in the world, so I mean she must be quite happy. I'm pretty sure. And is this a breakout season? She's 23?
I think so, yeah. I remember I played Q school with her when she first got her. I don't know if she was just going to play Symetra that next year because she didn't go to final Q school. I think it might have been in 2017. I don't know how old she was then, but but she was very good then. And I remember her parents being around her, and they're such a good support for her family. But to see what she's done since then, it's just amazing.
Yeah, she's doing pretty well. And if we turn our attention now to the conclusion of the Ladies European Tour, the final event being the Andalusia Costa del Sol Open de España. Now, the event was won by Spaniard Carlota Siganda, who finished four shots clear of the field. And third place that week was the runaway winner of this year's Order of Merit, Ataya Titikun. Wow. Now, she is a sensation. I think she's having a very good year. Gemma, what do you think?
Yeah, unbelievable. I think I read today, was she the one that won the Ladies European Tour event in Thailand when she was only 14 or something?
Yeah, it's 2017.
2017, yeah, yeah, amazing. But she's just so consistent, and unfortunately I haven't played with her yet, so I'd love to see what her game's like. But just seems like a very happy girl, and just seems a lot, very good energy, I would say, from what I've seen this week. But yeah, excited for her to be on the LPGA next year. Sorry if that was ahead of what you were going to say.
No, it's good. I saw her play at an event in the summer. Oh gosh, she was so brilliant. That was at the Aramco. And then she won at the Czech and the Swiss Opens as well. I mean, she's still just 18. And I think actually we've seen an explosion of a lot more Thai stars over the last few years as well. Iona, why do you think that is?
You're right. There is, you know, the Thai talent is strong and it's coming through. She's got fellow country women, the Jutanagarn sister is a good example. I was just going to say about Ataya Titikun before we move on, that Gemma's point, just pick up on that, is that, you know, again, I haven't had the pleasure of watching too much. I remember watching her at Woburn, actually, when she played in the AIG Women's Open as an amateur, and she was the leading amateur in the end of the day, she achieved that twice, actually. So by the time she turned professional, she not only had won professional events, but she had a lot of experience under her belt for such a young age. But the most important point I was going to say is that she's so smiley. And you mentioned that, Gemma. And I think, Jenny, if you were a professional golfer, you would embody the spirit of Ataya Titikun, because you're also very smiley.
I think sometimes you say when you're nervous and you don't know what to do, do you just smile? Is that what it is? Is that the reason behind it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have to pass that on to Gemma, although I sometimes get really nervous in my job too. And I don't think I smile by default when I get nervous. I think I look white as a sheet and slightly unwell.
Do you, Gemma, when you're playing, do you get nervous, or are you quite calm and very collected?
I do get nervous, but I would say, especially from what people have told me, I always look quite calm. But the mind is ticking. But yeah, I've definitely got better at dealing with it and use my breathing a lot to kind of calm my nerves down. So that's been the key for me.
Oh yeah, no, there must be techniques that you have. Iona, when you were playing on the tour as well, did you get nervous like that?
Definitely. And, you know, unfortunately, my career as an amateur was injury free. So my best memories are actually as an amateur and playing, you know, just before I turned pro, I played off a handicap of +3, and I played for initially Renfrewshire County, and then I moved down south and I played for Surrey. And those kind of days where I was cruising around injury free were, I think my demeanour was a lot better. But then when I turned professional, I had an injury in my wrist, and that frustration used to boil over quite quickly. And I wouldn't say I was a particularly nice person, especially to myself when I played golf. You know, I was very unforgiving, and I used to get nervous for sure. I know we'll talk more about Q School later on, but that's a particularly nerve-wracking place to go. Gemma, do you, if you don't mind me asking, do you work with anyone on the kind of psychology side?
Well, actually, interesting, about a year ago, I started working with a lady called Jane Story. She wrote the book Breathe Golf. I'm not sure if you've heard of that. It's a great book. But we work a lot on meditation. So it's been more, instead of kind of mental practices, it's been more just focusing on the breathing, really, and meditation. So that's really, really helped me over the last year, and been using it a lot during Q school. So it's kind of kept me grounded and a bit more calm than, especially during Q school, it's a very stressful few weeks. So I really relied on that a lot.
Is that something, is there breathing techniques that you would use then, like when you're playing, or is it all before you go out that day?
Well, I always do kind of in the morning, do some meditation, and then so it's not really techniques per se, it's just kind of remembering your breathing during the round, and it's kind of trying to get in the zone more often. Kind of when you get in the zone, if your listeners have kind of experienced that sensation. It's like you're just in the moment and you're not feeling, you don't have to think about what you're doing, and it's a wonderful feeling. And it's just kind of trying to get in that state of mind more often, kind of just feeling, even just walking on the ground and kind of feeling your breathing, has really helped me a lot. So it's a process. It's not just something that you can do just like that. And just doing it more often, hopefully you can get in the zone more often and hopefully help your game. So it's helped me a lot.
I wonder if that's what Titikun's doing, just doing lots of breathing.
She's probably just a natural at it.
Of course, it was another tie, Patty Tavatanakit, who won the first major of the year, the ANA Inspiration, which was back in April. And she was one of four first-time major winners this year. So you had Yuka Saso, who won the US Open, Nelly Korda at the PGA Championship, as we mentioned a minute ago, and Minji Lee, who took July's Evian Championship. Although there were a few people that took their revenge at the AIG Women's Open, of course, with Anna Norkvist sealing her third major triumph. And then, of course, we went on to the Solheim Cup as well, where Team Europe took a sensational win on US soil. We looked back on that in the last episode of the Women's Golf Show, which, by the way, if you're listening, you can download and listen back to. But I wonder, Iona, if I come to you, going through all these incredible events with all these incredible players, is there a standout performance or moment from this season that's stuck with you?
Gosh, it's an impressive list you've just reeled off, and so many moments to choose from. It's been an action-packed year, hasn't it? With Solheim Cups, Ryder Cups, Olympics. You know, it's all been jammed into just a regular playing schedule, which is full of majors and exciting events alone. I did start writing down some notes of highlights. And of course, I'm drawn towards ones I was involved in as a kind of first-hand experience. So there's a couple I'd like to discuss. The first, just as a highlight for me, was working at the Scandinavian Mixed Tournament in Sweden earlier this year, which is a mixed tournament, both men and women playing in a field for one prize. And the two goats of Swedish golf, Annika Sorenstam and Henrik Stenson, were the co-hosts. And that was a very special event to be involved in. As I mentioned, I was at the Evian, which is just a wonderful tournament from start to finish. And Minji Lee was triumphant there. It was an exciting finish. But I also worked at the AIG Women's Open. And there was a narrative that ran throughout that week that was probably one of the highlights for me this year. And that was the bright star, Louise Duncan, Scottish amateur, that had the most fantastic week. And she grasped not only the nation, but I think the whole of the golfing world that week in her performance. And a particular highlight was when she was out, everyone else was fully clad in, you know, thermals and waterproofs, and she went out in her shorts. And then she was interviewed post-round and they said, Louise, are you not freezing? And she was like, oh, you know, my legs are waterproof.
She's amazing. We had her on the show a little while ago, looking back at the Curtis Cup, actually. She was buzzing.
Yeah, I mean, she's wonderful for the game. She plays with that raw flair, natural talent. She's very athletic, wonderful golf swing. And, you know, it was really thrilling to watch her through that week. And that was a real highlight for me.
Yeah, I mean, you've gone to some brilliant events this year, haven't you? You really have travelled. Every time I look, I don't know, Gemma, if you ever look at Iona, you probably compete with who travels the most out of the two of you, actually. You're always somewhere more glamorous.
Well, I think Iona might have me there.
Yeah, I'm honestly not trying to win that prize. I really love home, but, you know, golf by nature, we follow the sun around the world, don't we, Gemma? And we just have to get used to living out of a suitcase.
Yeah, it's quite the lifestyle, isn't it?
So glamorous.
Gemma, if I come to you just talking about the AIG Women's Open as well at Carnoustie as a Scot, how special was it to play?
Oh, it was so special. I have quite a tie to Carnoustie, actually, because my grandparents used to live just 5-minute walk from the course. Dad moved there when he was 15, so he used to be a member. When I used to visit my grandparents, I always used to go to the golf course and even just walk around even before I played when I was quite young. But it's just such amazing memories going back there and actually being able to qualified at Panmure on the Monday, and it was just so special, and all my family was there, my cousins, my aunt and aunts and uncles. So it was just a special week, and what a course.
Yeah. Would you say that is one of the standout moments for you from the year, or is there something else that you reflect back on and you think, what a moment?
Yeah, that would probably be it. Apart from when I played in Portland and was in the final group that week and finished, I think it was T8th. So that was a highlight as well. But just I think the Women's Open every year is the highlight. And that's the one you kind of look towards and plan your schedule around. So especially when it's in Scotland and a special place like Carnoustie as well. So just being there was just gave me goosebumps, really.
Yeah. And also, fans were back. Hooray! How good was it to be playing actually in front of people watching again?
Oh, it was great. It's just amazing to actually hit a shot and hear some claps and stuff. It's when during COVID, it was like, oh, we'll be fine. It will just be, you know, like we're playing amateur golf again. But then once the fans come back, you really realise how much you actually miss them. It's just such good vibes when you've got fans there, and you're almost trying to show off. As a professional golfer, a professional athlete, you're always trying to show off a little bit, aren't you? So when you've got people there watching, it's even better.
I mean, I can say as an amateur playing, and well, Iona was there at the PGA, BMW PGA, I actually get nervous when there are crowds because I fear for their safety. I'm like, oh my God, you need to just step back a bit, please. That's how it differs between
well,
me and you. There.
I actually did almost hit someone this year in Arkansas. There's this big stand behind the green, and just saw it's a go for it par five. And I think I had a 3 wood or a 7 wood in. And there's these people just standing right next to the, probably 5 or 6 yards off the green. So not too far off the green, to be fair. But I hit this thing and it went straight right. And I just yelled, four. And then I say, oh, thankfully I didn't hit anyone because everyone kind of, you know, scattered. But yeah, that was a bit of a scary moment.
It's always always looks slightly awkward, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then you get up, you're like, oh, sorry. And then thankfully, I got up and down, so it was fine.
Excellent. Okay, well, it wasn't a good ending to that story then, thank goodness. I referenced at the start of the show, Gemma, that your season is only just coming to an end because you have been in Alabama the last couple of weeks playing in the Q Series. Can you tell us, first of all, right, for anyone listening who doesn't have any clue what is it?
Well, so at the end of the year, 100 people keep their cards on the CME points list. And the rest basically have to go back to, it's called Q Series. So there's actually 3 stages to Q School. Stage one, which is usually like all the amateurs and maybe girls that haven't done quite well in Symetra, they have to go back to that. And then there's a second stage, and each time there's cuts. So I think the top 60 maybe get through stage one, top 50. And then stage two, there's girls from Symetra that haven't got to Q Series. So the top 35 from Symetra get into Q Series, and then the top 10 they get their full cards from Symetra, and then so there's stage two, and then there's Q Series, which is the final stage where you have all the LPGA girls that didn't quite keep their card. And it's 8 rounds over 2 weeks, so Thursday through Sunday each week. The first week was over 2 courses, play each course twice, and then the next week we move 3 hours away to a different location. It's all on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail, so very nice courses. And the second week was just over 1 course. And it's basically a cumulative 8-round event. There's a cut after 4 for the top 75 in ties. And then the final week, I think there were 78 girls that made the cut. And then top 45 in ties get their LPGA status for 2022. So that was kind of a synopsis.
Oh, wow. I mean, Iona, it sounds like quite a lot to go through. Can you imagine what that must be like? 8 rounds of golf? I mean, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, that is a serious slog. I have actually had one visit to LPGAQ school and I didn't make it to the second half. So I think that tells the tale. I can't imagine 8 rounds of golf. You've got to be pretty cool and calm under the collar, you know, to keep your head and your energy for 8 rounds of golf. I get exhausted now, Jenny and Gemma, after 9 holes of golf. I'm kind of a 9-hole kind of gal, 9 and wine kind of thing. Yeah. And 8 rounds of golf. Good, you know, well done, Gemma, again. I mean, it's a huge, huge achievement.
Has to be one of the hardest challenges. Did it feel grueling at the time, Gemma?
Yes, it just feels like it's never ending. After the first round, you're like, okay, 1 out of 8, okay, 7 more to go. But it just, because it's obviously more mentally draining than physically, I would say, because it's Thursday through Sunday, 2 weeks. So it's like kind of playing 2 tournaments in a row, which is not that normal for us. But just mentally, it's sort of cumulative over the 8. And it's just, it's qualifying for your job next year, basically. So It's intense.
Okay. But you did it. You did it. So it all worked out all well. Good. And we've got to say well done, by the way. Congratulations. It must feel good.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, it feels all the hard work was worth it. And I can have a bit of downtime now, which will be nice.
Yeah, we should mention a couple of the other names who qualified. I mean, there's a few, but some notable names who qualified. Ataya Titikun, who we mentioned earlier there, one of Team Europe's Solheim Cup heroes as well. Emily Pedersen and 2019 AIG Women's Open champion Hinako Shibuno as well. So a good group of girls went through there. It's a big prize you've got for yourself there too, playing rights on the LPGA for next year. But what does that actually mean?
Well, so basically it should get me into most events next year, apart from maybe the first couple, because they're limited fields due to daylight in January, February time. But we'll just have to wait and see if I get into those, but fingers crossed. But the rest of the events I should get into, which is great, because the last couple of years I've been playing on limited status. So I had a few late call-ups last year, like first reserves and all that. So hopefully won't have to do any of that.
Yeah, but you've been on the LPGA before, haven't you?
Yeah, so this will be my fifth season, actually, which is crazy to think about.
Do you feel more prepared this time? Does it feel different?
Definitely, yeah. Thinking back to when I qualified as a rookie, I feel like a completely different player and much more experienced and feel much more comfortable out there. I know all the girls a lot better and kind of feel like I can play against them and, you know, hopefully beat them.
So then if looking ahead to next year, I mean, you've not got much time off then, really, have you? You've just got, how much have you got? A couple of weeks?
Well, it'll be, I think I'll have to go over kind of mid-January. So yeah, however many weeks that is, I can't even, my head's spinning at the moment.
Okay. So you've got a few weeks till then. But what is the plan that you're going to base yourself in the States, or are you going to be back over here?
Well, I would actually like to get a base in the States soon. So I might think about that in the next kind of month or so. But at the moment, the plan is just to base myself at home.
Well done once again. I mean, truly brilliant. So exciting. I think it's going to be a good year next year, Iona, don't you?
I do, Jenny. It's all heating up and the Scots are in the mix. That's what we like.
Oh, yes, we love that.
Next August, the world's best players descend on Muirfield for the AIG Women's Open. Be there to watch Anna Nordqvist defend her title as the championship makes its debut on the renowned links of Muirfield. Book today at aigwomensopen.com.
Now, you may know we love to keep an eye on the top level of the amateur game here on the Women's Golf Show. So I would like to highlight the last big amateur event of the year that took place back in November. It was the third Women's Amateur Asia Pacific Championship, and it took place at the Abu Dhabi Golf Club. Were either of you over there?
I was in Dubai at that time of year, just shortly after covering the DP World Final on the men's side. And I kind of heard a little bit about what was going on, and you know, that side of the amateur game is so prestigious, and these tournaments come with almost as much pressure as professional events do, and they get to be played on world-class venues. I'm sure, Gemma, you've got very fond memories as an amateur player, but I was in that neck of the woods, Jenny, but sadly not covering the event itself.
Okay. Well, if you look at the RNA YouTube page, by the way, you'll see this amazing, you'll see an amazing highlights package, because there was some truly brilliant golf played. And on the final day, Japan's Mizuki Hashimoto, right, she emerged victorious. Her final round, she got a 135-yard eagle on the third. It's really worth watching. It's just really good. And she looks very happy when it happens as well. Now, Hashimoto joins compatriot Yuka Yasudo and Ataya Titikun on the honour board of this young competition. So, Gemma, you played in Curtis Cups and amateur championships, right? But how important are all these events, as we were discussing, in terms of being, you know, the focal point at the amateur level?
Yeah, so important. Just highlights of my amateur career include tournaments like that, when I played the World Am and the Europeans, and played in the South American amateur. I remember the RNA being heavily involved in that, and it was amazing. I mean, such good memories, kind of travelling with the other Scottish teammates, and you know, you meet other girls that are out on tour right now, so you're meeting girls that you're going to be competing against for years to come. So it's just friendships you make for life, really.
Does it feel like you're playing on a pro event as well when you're on these?
You do, especially at the amateur level, because if you're playing maybe at home, some tournaments are, you know, a smaller feel. But when you get to those events, it's like, okay, this is it. This is the top of the, you know, the amateur level and the best you're going to compete against until you turn pro. So it's a great experience and you really want to be there, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, Iona, I'm coming to you because you answered so well when I asked you about the Thai golfers. So now I'm going to go over and ask you about Japanese golfers, because Japan's had a big year, not just for the ladies, but for the fellas too.
Yeah, you're just making me think there, Jenny, actually. You're right. Japanese golf has had a big year. And actually some research was released today, I believe, about just the growth in golf in general globally in the last 5 years, and it's at its all-time high. But let's start with the, you know, Japanese golf. You just mentioned a few names there, and of course, just touching on the men's side of the game, I was lucky to join the BBC commentary team this year in covering the Masters. That was one of the first events I did this year, and of course it was Matsuyama that took the title, and for Japanese golf that was absolutely massive. I think you know, they have a huge amount of respect for this game, both in the men's and the women's side, and it's just wonderful to see talent coming through. But I think, you know, if you look to the amateur tournaments and these big prestigious events like the one you've just mentioned, that's often where you get an indication of where golf is at within that country. And it's so important to look to that level of the game, the amateur game, and just below that, even to the kind of the youth side, to see what's really happening within the country in golf, because it's all good and well looking at the LPGA or the LET or the PGA or the recently renamed DP World Tour. But actually, if you look further down the ladder, I think that's where you get an indication of what's happening within the country. And it's clear that Japan are, they're coming at us.
Could I just add something? At Q Series, I was playing in front of Ayaka Furu, who's, I think she's 14th in the world, and she also got her LPGA card, and Inako Shibuno was also playing. But the Japanese media, I mean, it was the majority of the media there. I think they dominated the media section in the Q Series, and it was just amazing to see how excited they were. They were recording every shot she hit, and this is at Q School, so it just shows you how much, and I know every year it's the same with the Japanese players. They're just so excited, and to encourage their players to get to the top level, it's just amazing to see.
Well, you know what, Mizuki Hashimoto, I mean, she's going to have a great 2022. She's qualified for the Evian and the AIG Women's Open and their invitations to the Hana Financial Championship in Korea and the Augusta National Women's Amateur on that legendary golf course. So it will be a brilliant year for her. It really will. Also, really interesting what you said about the stats. I have some stats in front of me now that you've mentioned that. 5.5 million additional golfers have taken up the sport in the last 5 years, according to an RNA study. And there was a 2.4 million increase in Asia. Huge. The boost over there is massive.
That's incredible figures. I was just jaw on the floor reading some of the stats today about golf and the growth it's had. We know that COVID played an instrumental part in that, but I believe this growth was taking place before COVID was on any of our lips. I went to Japan a couple of years ago and on a trip to preview the Olympic golf course and to learn about Japanese golf in general. And I think per square meter, they have more golfers than any other country in the world. That's a fact that I've reeled off with confidence, but really internally, I'm not that confident about it. But it sounded really good. And I think it's not far off the truth, if not the truth. Cue lots of people now Googling it. But I think the bottom line is they love their golf and they're passionate about it. And in terms of the sense of the family, you know, and the family can play golf. And they have some wonderful golf courses over there as well. But that growth in Asia is just incredible. And it would be great, you know, to see that growth evenly spread across the globe. And I think importantly, it's about what we do now to keep those golfers within our community going forward so that they don't drop off and we continue the growth of golf for many, many years to come.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And in fact, we will talk in a little bit about the For Everyone campaign, which the RNA have got, which is about trying to get more and more people to get on board and give it a go. But we have to look at the year ahead in 2022. So Gemma, you said you're going to be probably trying to get back in mid-January. Do you see it going to be busy from that point onwards for you?
Yeah, it looks like there might be a bit of a gap in February time, but then from March onwards, it's pretty busy from then until December, really.
So when you are playing in the winter months, like for instance, are you on full time off or will you still be playing over the kind of Christmas period?
Well, over the Christmas period, I'm going to put the clubs away for a few weeks, I think 2 to 3 weeks. I haven't quite decided how long yet, but see how I feel. I know Dad does want to play tomorrow, which... I wasn't too keen on, but it's his holiday as well, so I'm going to play with him tomorrow. But yeah, I will put the clubs away and I'll pick it up in the new year.
You see, that's so difficult, isn't it? Because your dad's like, yeah, I want to play with my daughter. And you're like, no, it's my job. I want that time.
Yeah, we're on different priorities. He's holiday. He's like, yes, let's play golf. And I'm like, I've just finished 8 rounds of Q school. I'm like, no, I don't want to play golf, but it's okay.
You mentioned that he's a caddy. Has he ever caddied for you?
Well, he... only has ever caddied for me. He's caddied in all the Rose events that I've won and that I played in. So he's got a better record than my actual caddy in terms of wins. So, but he did caddy for me in my amateur days. I remember that when the last Women's Open was at Carnoustie, when I did the qualifier at Panmure, then he caddied for me there. That was a first experience in the kind of pro ranks, I guess, when I was an amateur playing with the pros. So some good memories with him on the bag.
Is it good having your dad, or is it sometimes like then he's the one you bicker with?
Yeah, I definitely would bicker with him more than my actual caddy, just because he's your dad. It's like you can just get on to him more, can't you? But yeah, he's good good for, I think he knows me so well, so when if I'm getting stressed, he knows what to say in the right time. So that's the main thing with him, I think, when he caddies.
Yeah, I mean, so Gemma's putting the clubs down, but Iona, I mean, now that you're not talking about other people's golf for a few weeks, is this when you get your clubs out and you kind of like really try and dial in your own golf game?
Well, I think I'm normally a fair weather golfer, and so coming into the depth of winter in Scotland's not my ideal practice conditions, but it's bringing back memories of when I studied at the University of St Andrews and nothing would stop me from practicing. I was keen as boots and I'd be out there. I remember having to do 20 minute stints because it was so cold that 20 minutes was all my hands could survive before I had to go inside and put £1 in the machine to get a hot chocolate and then sort of take a deep breath and go back out for more. But, you know, unfortunately, as I say, it was an injury that stopped me playing, and that injury lives with me today, and I have to manage that quite carefully. I think my Instagram lets on that I play a lot more golf than I actually do. As you said, we both played in the BMW Pro-Am event earlier this year. That was so nerve-wracking for me because it was the first time.
No, I don't believe you. No, you were so good.
It was. And I remember seeing you in the car park and sort of, you know, I was like, oh, hi, Jenny. Oh, you know, not really being able to keep my breakfast down. So thinking, I'm so nervous, you know, with these crowds and things. But I absolutely loved the day. And I think... it just had been a while since I was getting filmed a lot. I were creating this documentary also for the RNA. And so there was cameras following me around, and I should be used to that really. But when I was actually having to keep score for the first time in a very long time, because I don't really play for score these days, but you know, the bug's still there, Jenny. There's no doubt about it. My injury drives me absolutely bats. And people often say to me, you know, oh, you know, when are you playing again? Because I'm still professional. When are you going to play again, you know, compete again, Iona? And the answer I always say is, you know, I'd play competitively in a heartbeat tomorrow if I could. It's just that the back-to-back nature of professional golf, playing rounds back-to-back, isn't quite manageable for me. But 18 holes is, and that was, doctors said I'd never hit one golf ball again, let alone be able to play 18 holes. So I just really enjoy the golf I have now. And like Gemma mentioned, I do play with my old man. My dad loves to get out there and I love to play with him and friends as well, you know, that are all now enthusiastic about the game. We're talking about the growth of golf, and it's so funny because I think a lot of my friends from school and university and hockey days and further afield,
have always sort of referred to Iona. She's doing her golfy thing, you know, not quite sure what that is, but she's golfing in some way. During COVID, Jenny, I had lots of my friends calling me up. So just wondering if you could advise me on what driver I should get. I'm getting some lessons at the driving range. And all of a sudden, my phone was red hot with friends who have slagged me about this kind of golfy thing that I've been doing for years. Now, so keen, and they're all into it. And I'm delighted, and I'm so happy that so many of my friends, you know, in their late 20s and early 30s are now playing golf. And I just, yeah, I think I get as much enjoyment seeing people take up the game and become enthused at it and about it as I do playing my own golf now.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm the same. So I've only played a few years, and all my friends were just like, why are you taking up golf? That's so weird. And then suddenly they see how much enjoyment I get out of it and how my social life is so much better now that I play golf. And they're all, so many of them have started having lessons, sneaky little lessons at the driving range and going out. And actually quite a few of my friends have started buying kit, which is a sign that they're into it, isn't it? When you start looking at shoes or clubs, or you ask a question about tees and I'm like, what did you just ask me? And so it's been really nice, actually, because yeah, we're slowly recruiting them all over. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's so brilliant. I just love it. You know, you start getting these questions about, and I think golf, you know, you mentioned what to wear and the gear is important in golf, isn't it? You know, what you wear, how you feel, and making sure you've got some form of bat to smack. But ultimately, it's about having fun and getting involved and knowing that it is a game, hashtag, for everyone.
Yeah, it really is. And I know you have been working with the RNA quite a lot. You've been looking a lot about the health benefits of golf, because there are tons, aren't there?
There certainly are. And I know you're healthy, Gemma. You're obviously an athlete at the very elite end of things. And I've been very fortunate this year. One of the highlights of my work has been being involved in a project called Iona Investigates Golf and Health. And this is a three-part documentary that's coming out soon. It's all about golf and health and the benefits that we experience when we play golf, both physically and mentally. I think we touch on golf through COVID and the impact that's had on many people taking up the game, which is the positive thing, but also, you know, the impact COVID's had on many people around the world mentally, and why golf can be a great release and a great place to go to be outside. And it's been great fun. I've spoken to many experts, as well as getting the stories of individuals who have shared and have been brave enough to share their stories. I don't want to give too much away, but I spoke to people such as Jason McAteer, ex-Liverpool and ex-Republic of Ireland footballer, and he was very brave in sharing his story in recovering from deep depression and the role that golf played in his life. I also spoke to James Taylor, who is an ex-England cricketer superstar who had a condition in his heart that stopped his career in its tracks, and the role that golf played in his life. And some really inspiring stories from people who have been able to share the role that golf has played. And then, of course, we've had the experts, Dr. Andrew Murray, who plays an instrumental role on the DP World Tour, formerly the European Tour, and the role that he comes in with, the science. You know, and there's been years, I think 7 years in total, of research that's gone into exploring the role that golf plays in our health. And actually, they can now scientifically say that golfers live on average longer than non-golfers. And so I think it's quite incredible. And, you know, at every age, every stage of our life, golf can play a different role. And if we look, you know, the three of us, the role that it plays in our lives, I know, Gemma, it's your profession, but how wonderful and how lucky that you have a profession that's outside and so sociable. And I think that sociable nature of golf is really important in the later stage of our life as well. And as we age, you can often become lonely and experience disconnection. And that can be really scary. And I think golf is, again, like you said, Jenny, it's a great thing for the social life. And what a feeling you have after you play 18 holes of golf and you come home and you really feel like you've achieved something that day, and you can feel proud of yourself. And I know I sleep better at night when I've achieved that. I've golfed my ball from the first tee to the 18th hole, and that is something I'm very proud of. So it's a great fun documentary. I really hope that people enjoy it, and I'm really looking forward to sharing it with the world soon.
Oh no, without a doubt, it sounds great. I'm looking forward, and I love Iona Investigates. That's like there's a whole series to come of that, I'm sure.
Series 2 coming soon, Jenny.
I love it. And you're right though, I mean, there's so many benefits from the health, and also from a mental health point of view, just getting out there and doing some exercise and playing golf makes you feel good. Gemma, if you weren't, I know that you're having a break, but if you weren't playing golf, you know, if you had like a month off, a forced month off, would you find yourself getting frustrated?
Well, I end up missing it because I'd say I enjoy, really, really enjoy the playing of it. I think the one thing when I retire from professional golf, I will definitely still play. I probably won't practice like I do now, which will be quite nice, I think. You can just go out there and play golf and then have a drink afterwards and go home. I'm quite looking forward to that after I've finished my professional career. But I think it's just such a great way to spend the day. You can have four ball, three friends, and just have a fantastic time. And a bit of competition as well is always good. I've always liked the competition aspect of it. And you can do that in any way. You can just, you know, throw some balls up and have a four ball match. So it's just great. You don't need to be playing in the medal every week or anything. It doesn't matter. You can just go out there for 9 holes or whatever, even 6 holes, however many you want. So it's such a great game to have in your life.
And is it still fun when you've got to play 8 rounds and that'll get you through into next year?
Yes, it's still fun to make the birdies and all that, but it's more fun, you know, playing the normal events, I would say, than Q school.
Yeah, I imagine so. Now, I want to ask you both as well for a little tip, because there are many people listening and they all want to know what they should be working on in the winter months. It might not be the ideal time to go out there and, you know, drag your clubs around a freezing cold golf course. But if you can give a tip for what people should focus on, maybe something that you focus on, that would be brilliant. So Iona, let's start with you.
Right. Well, I think we know that a lot of professional golfers use this period of time to rest, but also after the resting is done to put in a shift in the gym, don't they? And they like to use that as a kind of a big step forward in the physical sense, because through the playing year, it's very difficult to find the time to lift heavy or do these things in the gym for fear of feeling stiff and immobile for a tournament coming up. So I think just in general, this is a good time to prioritise the physical fitness. What we do know is that when you play golf, you are improving your physical fitness. We know that for a fact now. If you tune into this investigative series with the RNA, you'll find out more about that. But when we stop and we don't, and it's cold outside and the winter comes in, we get very much more stationary and we're sitting down. And I think one of the key bits of research that we discovered in the Iona Investigate series was the rotation and how golf is so good for our rotation, because so much of what we do in life is linear. We go forward, we walk forward, you know, we're typing at our computers forward, we're on the phone, we're looking forward, and it's all very much in this linear plane. And what golf does is it allows us to rotate, and that has multiple health benefits. So Jenny, my tip is actually very simple, and we can all do it now together. I know that everyone at home can only hear what's going on here, but if you put your hands on your shoulders and you're sitting in the chair, then these are called seated rotations. And when we don't play as much golf, I think this is a really good exercise to do, because, you know, golf's not giving us that wonderful rotation down the lats and down the long side of our body. So all I want you to do, girls, is just put your hands on your shoulders and just as you keep your hips still seated on the chair, rotate to the right and rotate to the left. And you can do this when you're watching TV. You can do this when you're, you know, on a Zoom meeting. Just put your video off for a second or two. You can do it at any time. Even better, if you're waiting for the hair straighteners to warm up, you can do it in front of the mirror. And, you know, you can have a little look at how good is your rotation. You know, I'm definitely stiffer when I rotate to the left. But anyway, that's my exercise, Jenny.
I feel I like that. I was watching Gemma do that. You have got good rotation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I need it.
That's all right. I definitely need to practice mine a little bit more. But yeah, that is a good one. Maybe though, yeah, if you are doing a meeting, just make sure the video is off on the Zoom. That's all I'm saying. Okay, right, Gemma, your go. What's your tip?
Well, I'd say it's obviously very cold during the winter months, so maybe something, I mean, putting is key for me. So, and putting during the cold months is just miserable. Iona mentioned not being able to feel her hands in St Andrews, and I've definitely felt like that before. But I've got this, I'm going to sell Phil Kenyon's mat here. It's a Visio mat. It's got like a, it's got the arc of the putting stroke. And I quite like to just do maybe 10 minutes a day on that each day. It can really, it's got a little gate for the ball to go through, and you can make it hard or easy for yourself, and maybe just have a little target at the end of the carpet or whatever, and just put on that for 10 minutes a day, and I think that will help your stroke for next year.
Oh, that's good. I had a putting mat. I swear the little gate was too small for the ball, because I was like, that ball does not go through that. But then just because it was the way I was hitting it, as we discovered. And listen, if you are looking for more coaching gold, then be sure to check out, there's a series of brilliant instructional videos. They're out this week from the former AIG Women's Open champion, Georgia Hall. She's got 5 episodes, and she'll break down what to focus on when going from tee to green with the help of friend of the show, George Harper Jr. So take a little listen to this.
And you mentioned the pace. I guess for me, I used to do a little tick-tocking motion to try and get rhythm, because when I first started, or when I see people new to the game, there's whacking it or they're short, that distance control is so hard. So is there like a rhythm? Is there a feel that you can run with during this?
Yeah, sometimes when I'm struggling with pace, I like to say in my head 100-1. So 100 on the backswing, 1 on the forward swing. Okay. I see a lot of beginners hit the ball very hard and they have a short backswing.
Yeah.
But, you know, with putting, it's really important to have the same backswing and forward swing if you can. So I'll say it to myself to hopefully get the pace. 100-1.
Oh! That was a fantastic putt. Now, what I did notice about that putt as well is that there's a little bit of movement. It's not a dead straight putt. So how do you read a putt? How do you know which way it's going? What's the basics around actually working out which way the ball's going to curve?
The most basic way to read a putt for me is just to see where the highest point of the ground is.
Okay.
That's the easiest way. So on this putt, I'm, you know, behind the golf ball here, and I look either side of the hole, which side is the highest part? Well, you've got a massive ridge here and it's going down. So obviously it's a right to left putt, and that's the most easiest way to read a putt.
So basically there's some very good basic tips there from Georgia, which I think I'm going to be using when I next go out to do some putting. Honestly, I am so bad at putting. I cannot tell you. It's like I'm just unable to putt, and I do not... No one understands it. It's just so bad. I could do with some proper lessons. Maybe next time Iona or Gemma, next time I see you.
Yeah, I've got one. Just be the ball.
Okay, right? Just be the ball.
Just be the ball.
There you go.
That's all there is to it.
Okay, fine. That's what I'll bear that in mind next time I go out then. Thank you very much. Okay, so you can watch George's Guide to Golf on the RNA YouTube channel from this week, and it's all part of the For Everyone campaign, which we chatted about, and it's devised to encourage more women and girls to give the game a go. And I do really urge you to check out foreveryone.rnda.org, and there you can find a load of inspiration and information on how to get started in golf, including free taste sessions at local clubs, and I mean you can go to a driving range. That's what I love doing this time of year, actually. It's really easy just to go to the driving range, because you can go there even if it is bucketing. Some of them have heaters, so you're not going to freeze. And also, what's really good, I've got a little girl, she's 10, she's got her own little mini set of clubs, and she's slightly annoying because they always go straight, and then she starts giving me tips, which is most infuriating. However, it's still nice. It's her, me and my husband, and we play games, and it's just a really nice way of getting everyone involved and enjoying golf.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's really important to get everyone involved from an early age. Mind you, how old were you both when you started playing golf?
I was 4.
Oh, right. 10's really old then, isn't it?
She's got plenty of time.
I was 19 actually when I started playing golf, and I played hockey, field hockey, and then so I was a late starter, but it's never too late. Any age you can start playing golf.
Yeah, okay. And as a pro even, Gemma, do you think that, you know, you still get satisfaction from going to a driving range?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I'm actually my home course was closed just before coming out here to Q School, and ended up going to the local driving range. It was actually quite fun. They had these little monitors where, like, you got little games to play, and I was like, oh, this is quite fun. You can go there. There was a few people there with friends having a drink, and there's heaters, like you said, and even in the dark nights, they've got lights as well. So great fun, actually. So I might go there more often.
There you go. And Iona, it's a good way to play as well when you haven't got much time, because you can just go, right, half an hour, let's go blitz some balls, and then, you know, you've done a bit of practice.
Definitely. I have to say I'm living Gemma's retirement dream. I don't really practice anymore. I just play. But of course, in the winter, that's harder. So definitely the driving range is great fun. Recently, I was in Dubai and I was at Topgolf, which is another great initiative to have some fun, eat some food, have a few drinks, and, you know, play to these targets. And that's great. I know there's a new Topgolf coming to Glasgow soon. And I think there's one down in the south of England somewhere already.
Yep.
So Topgolf's great fun, but the driving range is really good fun. There's a good one here in St Andrews. There's many, many excellent driving ranges all over the country. So we're spoilt for choice, really. And it's great, you know, you can go and take your family and have a long driving competition. Most of them have a distance measuring device of some sort now, so you can show your brothers or whoever who's boss.
Yeah, and talking of Topgolf, there are three currently, and they're all down south. So if you are in the kind of M25 area, you've got your pick there. But it is a bit like Tenpin Bowling does golf, and you can all play, and you can order food and drink at the same time. It's a really fun, really fun way to get introduced to golf. And the RNA have actually teamed up with Topgolf at the moment. You can go and have a lesson. You can go and get a group of girls, go down for a fiver, and you get a drink included. So it's actually quite a nice way to encourage more people to take up. We just need more Topgolf throughout the country, that's the problem, so there can be more of it. Listen, thank you so much. That is our last episode of the year. I'm delighted to say the Women's Golf Show will be back in 2022. So if you haven't done so already, make sure to hit the subscribe button on your podcast platform of choice, and that way you will not miss our return next year. And obviously, if you can leave a review and let us know who you'd like to see on the podcast, or anything you'd like us to focus on in future shows, if you'd like Gemma and Iona to return, you know, just let us know. You can tweet us at RNA using the hashtag WGS. Thank you both so, so much for coming on the Women's Golf Show today. It's been lovely to chat to you. Have a lovely break for Christmas, and good luck. I think, Iona, we can both say good luck, Gemma, in 2022.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Good luck, Gemma, and you're doing the whole of Scotland proud.
Yeah, flying the flag.
You certainly are. We can't wait to see it. And that's it from us. So look, thank you so much for listening, and we will catch up next year.
The R&A World Golf Museum is now open in St Andrews. There's something for everyone, with thousands of unique and fascinating artefacts, interactive AV, hands-on activities, miniature putting, a rooftop cafe and shop, and much more. Visit worldgolfmuseum.com to plan your visit.